28. The sun was just rising as the gate closed behind Nuto and me. Not that I could see the orb itself through the miles of trees. It definitely made it easier to assess the lay of the land. Auric sense would give me a lot of useful information, but I found that it didn't give me the gut-level understanding that examining things with my regular, everyday vision provided. This way. Nuto pointed out the direction the far-off Diplodocus herd would come from, and we started walking. After about a quarter of a mile, I stopped and summoned four scout ants. Okay, guys. I turned back around and pointed toward the village. Imagine there's a line between me and the village. You two, head in a line about 15 degrees to the left. You two, go along about 15 degrees to the right. Not exact. Don't try to tunnel through trees or anything crazy. After a few antenna twitches with each other, they started off into the forest as I'd instructed. Now, I used my auric sense to see the world from their points of view, in addition to watching them with my normal vision. It was like watching one of those TV news shows with the display split into squares with a dude in each square pontificating on whatever topic they're talking about, only without the arguing. Also, I wasn't just watching separate screens. I was directing my little pundits, telling one to move to the left of a tree and the other to the right, having one pause to give me more data on the makeup of the soil, another to analyze the contours of the slope in front of it. I'd done this kind of mental juggling often enough now that it was second nature, but that didn't mean it didn't take a fuck of a lot of focus. Lucky for me, Nuto wasn't much of a talker, so I could concentrate on what my scouts were showing me. Once the ants had passed the walls of the village, I had them turn around and come back to me along the same paths, picking up any information I might need that I'd missed the first time. Okay, good job, guys, I said. Have a nice nap. Then I snapped my fingers and sent them back to their auric limbo. No, I didn't need to snap my fingers, but Nuto was watching, and it's gotta be freaky when dog-sized ants just poof out of existence with no warning. So it felt like I should do something so that their disappearance didn't come out of the blue. I cracked my neck to the one side and then the other. Okay, I think I've got what I need. Do you think they've got breakfast ready for us? I'm sure they do. We started back toward the village, with Nuto still silent. I thought maybe it was reverence because of the magic stuff, but after a couple of minutes, he asked, Sir, do you really think you can make a wall that will protect my village from the stampede? I do, I nodded. And it would protect us from other stampedes later? He asked. I nodded. I mean, what I'm doing right now will just deal with this one herd from this one direction, but after that, yeah, I'd like to stick around and build a system that would protect you from whatever dinosaurs come from whatever direction. It would be nice to not have to run again. He gazed skyward. Not to have to run, and then come back to everything destroyed, and have to rebuild the walls, the gates, the huts, the tables, the cooking pits, the smokehouse, then hunting and foraging to replenish our supplies. And until we rebuild the walls, there is the fear, where in the forest are the Saurians? Will they attack us while we have no defenses? You all have to do that a lot, I take it, I said, as I considered how much work that would be. Having to rebuild the entire village. That would be a ridiculous setback. Nuto nodded. 7 times we have had to run since I was old enough to remember. 2 of those, we did not have to rebuild. He probably wasn't more than 15 years old. That was an attack every 2 years or more on average. Sure, there had to be some advanced nomadic societies, but most of them had pack animals or vehicles once the technology develops. Here, the people had to carry everything themselves, so there was only so much they could take besides necessities. Plus, there was just the time and energy spent rebuilding. How much easier would their lives be if they could put that energy toward, well, any number of things? They could be learning crafts like metalworking, or masonry, and advancing their skills in woodworking and herbalism. They could develop agriculture, grow crops, and also domesticate animals, if there were any candidates smaller than a hadrosaur. None of that was going to happen until they could defend themselves against lizard men and orange fucknuts. Those thoughts bounced around in my head as we returned to town, and I saw Queenie was with the guards who met us inside the gate. She looked put out.
"Master," she inquired, "you did not take me with you to assist you."
"I didn't need anything the scouts couldn't handle, so I figured I'd let you sleep in," I smirked.
"I am not one of the pussycats who feel the need to nap all day."
She met my eyes then.
"As your summon, I don't require sleep."
"But do you enjoy it?" I asked. She furrowed her brow in confusion, as if I'd asked whether we were in a desert or whether it was midnight.
"My pleasure comes from serving you, Master. Anything else is irrelevant."
"It isn't irrelevant to me, Queenie." I patted her hand. "I like it when you get to have a little fun."
"I don't understand," she frowned.
"That's okay. Just trust me." I smiled and pulled her in for a hug.
"I always trust you," she murmured. "You are the master of all things."
"Well, fun is a thing. Therefore, I am the master of it." I grinned.
"This is true,"
she nodded somberly.
"If you wish me to have fun, I will do so because you wish it."
"That's my girl. Now," I gestured toward the assortment of foods being prepared in the village square. "I command you to find the most disgustingly sweet thing these guys are serving up and have a double helping."
"As you wish, Master."
She smiled at me with the glee of a kid at Christmas and practically skipped toward a fire pit that was surrounded by platters of what looked like fluorescent yellow pancakes. Clearly, she had been considering her options for a while. I chose a good-sized slab of hadrosaur and a square of the green wasabi-like stuff and took a seat by Thera and Kanil, who were alone. She smiled tensely and gave me a quick kiss, but the two of us sat in silence, each occupied by our own thoughts, while Kanil's quill pen scratched on the middle of a roll of brown-flecked paper. Actually, the whole place was so quiet that I could hear the sounds of insects out in the forest. There were rarely even whispers, and most of those came from younger kids. A lot of furtive glances came my way. Then, I realized that people were looking at Kanil as much as me, and I guessed that he'd shared his account of the wall I'd created when we met. They might not trust the newcomer, but they trusted Kanil. Otherwise, they'd probably have already packed up and headed toward the village across the river, as if he knew what I was thinking. Kanil looked up and smiled reassuringly at me. Everyone finished their meal quickly, and the leftovers were wrapped and put away within minutes. I stood and walked to the center of the group. "I know everyone's scared, and maybe you're having second thoughts about putting your fate in the hands of the funny-looking, yellow-headed stranger. Trust me, you're going to have third thoughts about it when I tell you that I wasn't kidding earlier. All I need you guys to do is sing. It might not sound like much, but I can tell you from experience that music magnifies my abilities, and I need your help for this to work.
I looked at the faces of the surrounding people, and along with the fear, I saw resolve. They looked like soldiers getting ready to take an impossible hill. Right on cue, a booming bass voice started singing one of the battle songs I'd heard the night before. I turned to see the voice was coming from my reserved young guide, Nuto. Other voices joined in, from sturdy baritones to soaring sopranos to piping children. With no one directing them, the whole village formed into a column two abreast, and together we marched through the gate. I had decided I'd begin my work on the left-hand wall of my planned wedge, work my way to the point, and then come back toward the village to make the other wall. I took a few seconds to reorient myself as the villagers moved to a new battle song. This one, including percussive hand claps and foot stomps. I knelt with my hand on the ground like I usually did when using earth magic, but I felt like I needed more of a connection, so I sat on the ground, cross-legged like some crunchy tree-hugger yogi, which I guess was more on the mark than I would have liked to admit. I spread my auric sense out across the forest floor, 50 feet or so in front of me. I probed deep under the surface, taking note of the major roots of the trees. Every time I found a pocket of earth that wasn't of vital importance to any tree, I basically took an aura highlighter to it. Not surprisingly, there wasn't a whole lot of vacant real estate. Fortunately, trees don't have much use for rocks. And as I'd guessed from the plentiful boulders that dotted the forest, there was a lot of rock mixed with the soil. As I searched deeper, there were fewer roots and more stones, until my sense was hitting broken bedrock. "Yeah," I grunted to myself. "That's the stuff." Now came the tricky part. I needed to get slabs of bedrock out from under the trees and out through those vacant patches that I'd highlighted so I wouldn't do any more damage than necessary to the trees. Oh, and I needed to remove the slabs in such a way that I didn't cause the towering trees above them to topple over. No big deal. I was just playing Jenga with a fucking skyscraper on top of my tower and then moving on to the next tower and the next and so on. Fortunately, I kicked ass at Jenga when I was a kid. I started small with just a puny little slab about 3 feet square and 7 feet long. It was underneath some interlocked chunks, so I could afford to leave the cavity for now. As the ground started to vibrate, Nuto switched to a ballad with a slower tempo. I think the harmony resonated with the earth, or maybe the opposite of resonating, because the tremor diminished, and it felt like the rock I was moving was sliding on a pool of butter. I swear, I wasn't even pushing, just steering it a little to guide it to the gap between tree roots. A slow, steady foundation of soil poured out of the earth. And then, from the center of that fountain, arose the first piece of my Diplodocus diverting wedge wall. It looked like a big stone hard-on, but that was probably just me. I said the same thing when I saw Stonehenge for the first time. Mine wasn't as long as those, but I was just getting started. There was a pause in the singing for a few cheers, but Nuto got everyone focused again, and that got me focused again. I kept working at the bedrock under the same tree my first one had been under, shifting one piece of rock to brace a corner of the slab above it so I could slide the third one out, then,
choosing a slightly smaller boulder and lowering the slab above a few inches. The tree wobbled precariously a couple of times, but when I was done, the entire root system was intact. It was just 4 inches or so lower than it had been. On to the next Jenga tree, excavating the bedrock beneath it. I summoned a half dozen ants and set them to work doing the finicky work of bracing the beginning of my wall while I moved on down the line. Just as I began to feel the fatigue from the effort I was expending, I got a message that I'd never expected to see.
You have learned the skill, auric construction. Increasing your skill will increase your ability to create structures by manipulating the world itself.
I stared at it for a good several minutes. So far, what I had been doing was sort of mimicking a geomancer skill I'd used before in Terraforma. First, I'd created a framework using aura, like I'd started to do when I was terraforming Ares, then using my title, Of the Cold and Dark, which gave me control over earth magic to fill it with the earth. Only now, I had gotten a skill designed for just that, and what's more, it didn't seem to require the title anymore. Though it did make things easier, a fact I learned by looking at the aura requirements with it both equipped and unequipped. Now, I could just roll my skill and whatnot against the medium at hand. Sweet. Which was made even sweeter, because I'd stored up a shitload of skill points, and I immediately dumped them all into auric construction. After that, things got a lot easier. I don't know if the villagers were leveling up on singing or if they'd been sneaking tonfruit, but they never faltered. Denno and three other guys belted out something with a refrain that reminded me of an a cappella version of Queen's We Will Rock You, and I just about knocked over a megalith of chert because how fucking appropriate is that? I reached the tip of my planned wedge about halfway through the morning, judging from the angle of the sun. I tried not to worry about time running out, reminding myself that I was moving faster as I went along, so in theory, the second wall would take less time. But I was nervous. A group of scouts reported in, saying that the Diplodocus were definitely running, and running this way. Also, the fires were moving closer along with the dinosaurs. Apparently, the Saurians or Orange Clan or whoever it was, they were following the Diplodocus and setting new fires as they went, which meant the dinosaurs were going to stay spooked. The added bonus was that the new fires would probably steer the herd, making the chances of them veering away from us pretty fucking slim. I could tell the villagers were nervous too. The battle songs and barroom anthems were now interspersed with songs about their gods, who were apparently sometimes benevolent and sometimes irrational assholes. I didn't know whether this planet actually had a patron god or gods or not, but if it did, I vowed to come back with my god powers as soon as they extended past my own solar system and knee a deity or two in the nads, if they had any. For now, I channeled that anger into my work. I caught a break halfway through the second wall when I passed through an area with a dead tree. Dead trees don't give a shit if you disturb their rotting roots, so I just shoved a big-ass oval of dirt to the side, tree and all. The hardest part was controlling the tree's descent so that it didn't fuck up my wall, or the villagers, or crash into a neighboring tree and cause a domino effect. That didn't involve earth magic, so I couldn't manage it from a distance. The only idea that came to me at the moment was to stand under it with the sword of the Destroyer King raised above my head, point facing upward, and propel aura infusion pulses one after the other up through the sword. I wanted to just smash the bastard, but I was pretty sure the woody shrapnel would end up injuring people. So instead, I let each infusion pulse break the trunk's fall a little. Picture Charlie Chaplin falling off a skyscraper and hitting awning after awning after awning. Finally, it was safely on the forest floor, and the only thing that kept my body from collapsing like an abandoned puppet was my ego. Didn't want the villagers to see that. So I slumped against a boulder and waited for the window to appear in my vision, telling me I'd leveled up again. It didn't come. Fuck. Apparently, I hadn't done anything different enough from anything I'd done before, and lowering a log 200 fucking feet long and wide enough to drive a tank through wasn't impressive enough to warrant a new level. Whoever wrote the rules of this world that wasn't a game could fuck themselves. Then, I realized I'd gotten 200 feet of wall right. It wasn't stone, but as one long piece, even a whole herd of Diplodocus couldn't just knock it down and crash through. It just needed to be moved into place, and I had minions that could do that. My aura was seriously depleted from my maximum, but that still left me enough to summon a shitload of ants and golems and Pooh, my dire bear, partly just because I hadn't seen him for a while. The villagers oohed and awed when Pooh appeared, but it turned out they were just impressed with his fur. After all, he was kind of puny compared to the creatures on this planet. But being covered with something other than scales or feathers was new and exotic. I took a few minutes to regenerate my aura while my summons moved the tree trunk into position. Then, I went back to pulling menhirs out of the crater left by the tree's roots. Holy shit, was it easier than what I'd been doing. No maneuvering stone around stone or slab from under slab. No worrying about balancing shit, just focus my aura on whatever big rock was easiest to get to, lift it through loose gravel and dirt, drag it into place, move on to the next. Once I depleted my crater, my wall extended a few yards past the village. I was planning to end it another 50 feet farther on, enough that if a Diplodocus took a right turn at the end of my barrier, they would still be far enough beyond the village that we'd be okay. Unless they reversed direction completely. But that didn't seem likely. I looked around to see if there was another dead tree I could salvage. Because even though bringing the first one down safely had sucked, it seemed like the effort had paid off in the end. The singers ended a song and took a quick break while I pondered. That's when we all felt it. The ground beneath us was trembling with the pounding of Diplodocus feet.